Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Susanna Butcher.
Oh, Susanna, darling. We all touch ourselves.
And Jamie Brickhouse.
Jamie. I guess that can be a boy's name, too.
That and more. But first, I want to remind you that if you're not following us on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, you should. It's a great way to keep up on the new episodes, the live show dates, our special events like our curated social events called What's Your Story, and especially our Facebook group and our subreddit. Listeners like you come together to discuss each week's new stories, and sometimes stories from like a decade ago. So come on over, join the conversation. All the links are at the top of the page at risk-show.com. Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is obviously Beastie Boys behind me now. But right next to me, not really, I'm just pretending, is John LaSala, who put this whole episode together, returning for the third time now to also host the episode. And with that, I'm just going to fold myself into this suitcase for John to toss into the river.
All right, that's that. Super. Thank you, Kevin. And we're calling this week's episode Shameful, on account of the shameful behavior displayed in these two stories. The first one will be from a real greenhorn, virginal storyteller. It was her first time telling a story on stage, in fact. And the second, from frequent flyer, repeat offender, far from virginal, risk storyteller, the legendary Jamie Brickhouse. And they both have fabulous accents. But real quick, before we get into our first story, every episode, you hear how much Risk is struggling financially. We don't like to talk about it, like, at all. But it's true. If Risk has changed your life for the better, in small ways or large, like it has for so many people, please help us keep it going however you can. Just a one-time donation at paypal.me/riskshow or monthly backing with assloads of perks at patreon.com/risk. So, our first shameful story will be from Susanna Butcher, or Suze, as she'd rather we call her. You know we do a show regularly at the Lyric Hyperion in LA, and Suze told this one at our most recent show there, only just over a month ago. So take a listen to what you missed out on when you didn't go to that show. Here's Suze with a story she calls...
Here's Janie!
Go. I was brought up in a very British, stiff upper lip kind of family. My parents are both very conservative. My mum particularly, she would always say, "Susanna, the Conservative Party could put up a donkey and I would still vote Conservative." She is an avid churchgoer and she would host Bible study at her house. She wears little twin set and pearls. And when she also does the flowers for the altar, she makes sure that she brushes all of the pollen off the lilies so that they don't get on the vicar's robes. But when I was growing up, when I was going through puberty, that topic was completely off bounds, including sex and bodies. So when I was 12, she actually just left a copy of the Usborne Book of Growing Up on my bed, because she'd rather that than have to have a conversation about the birds and the bees with me. And then later, when I needed to actually get a bra, she couldn't even bring herself to say the word bra. So we went shopping for the item. And I remember standing in the local department store and the lady was fitting me and the cold tape was around my boobs. And my mum darted her head in like a nervous meerkat, but avoiding eye contact. "Is there anything I can do to help, Susanna?" And this level of anxiety just got me so wound up. And the whole thing was mortifying for everybody involved. I was just really ashamed, really, about my growing body. So much so that I didn't even tell her I'd started my period. At 16, by the way, I was very much a late bloomer. And at school, if you had your period, it meant that you didn't have to go swimming, but your mum had to write you a note. So I said one morning underneath the duvets, muffled, "Mum, please, can you write a note for swimming because I've got my..." I didn't want to have to say the word period. And she didn't want me to say the word period. And she suddenly realised the penny dropped and she said, "Oh God, Susanna, of course, say no more. Yes, I'll write the note. Thank you, of course." And then later, I now have kids, but I had a baby shower and she chose to say after a couple of glasses of bubbly to my friends that she thought breastfeeding was disgusting. Noted that some of my friends were actively breastfeeding at the time, which she knew. And she said it was far too bodily for me. I took the pill, which just shut off the supply, and then you were formula fed, Susanna. And then that was the best thing to ever really happen to us. So anyway, you can imagine, she was quite uptight. Things were a bit more awkward. I just wasn't very like out there when I was kind of growing up as a teenager. I suppose that like inspired how I was, affected how I was with boys as well. I fancied boys. I loved them. Like, had Leonardo DiCaprio, Nick from Backstreet Boys off of my wall. Loved the blonde curtains of the 90s. But I just preferred boys from a distance. I was just a bit intimidated. And I'd meet up with boyfriends in the pub, younger drinking in the UK, and I'd have my hands buried deep into my hoodie, into the pocket, so that they wouldn't be able to hold my hand. And then I'd wear no fear. I mean, the irony... wasn't lost. I was definitely lost to me. A no fear cap, and the peak would obviously create a barrier so that any potential suitor couldn't actually come forward and make a move. So I did want to have sex. I wanted to have sex just so that I could kind of, you know, be part of the chat at school. But that was it. I didn't have any burning desire in my loins just yet. So no surprises that by the age of 18, I was still a virgin. I had a very close friend, Lottie, who was very confident, and she was very highly sexed from quite a young age, actually. I remember we went to Brownies when we were 10, and the brownie hut had these two pillars outside of it, and Lottie shimmied up to the top of one of these pillars and very slowly glided down with the pillar between her legs, and she said, "Oh, that feels so good." I remember looking and thinking, that looks like a lot of effort. What on earth could feel that good to require that amount of work? Anyway, she then, you know, had sex, and I knew all the ins and outs about her sex life. One day, we were on the bus on the way to school, and this was an important day because this was our penultimate day of school. We were doing our A-level exams, and we were going to be finishing the next day. And Lottie had this magazine, Ms. Magazine, which is a British teenage magazine, and in it there was an article all about masturbation. And she was talking to me about what fun she had had the previous night by herself. And I kind of didn't really know what she was alluding to. And then she could see that in my face. And she said, "Oh my God, babes, I was flicking my bean." I said, wow. I mean, I knew boys wanked. I didn't really know that it was something that girls did and definitely wouldn't talk about it. She said, "Listen, you take this copy home with you. Have a lot of fun. Let me know how it goes. Follow the instructions in Ms. to the T and gave me a salacious wink. So I hope you don't mind, but that evening, night before my exam, I did have a go. And excuse me whilst I stand here like the Queen, with my hand raised in a strange little kind of royal wave, because I'm not putting it down there to show what happened. I followed the instructions to the T, and I went forwards and backwards. Right, okay. And then it said up and down. Okay, fine. And then roundy round, round the other way. Figure of eight. Okay, fine. I did all of these different things over and over again, different pressures. I carried on. But honestly, guys, I at no point was turned on or really wanted to be touching myself. And there was no promised explosion, no surprises. So I put it to one side, gave up, went to sleep. I woke up the next day. Oh, dear. Things down there did not feel okay. I was walking around like there was something in between my legs. But I didn't have any time to worry about that because I had to get myself to that final exam, remember? So I was focused, did the exam. It was brilliant. We'd finished school. Celebrate good times, come on! So we did the shots. We went out that evening. We were drinking cheap champagne. Wonderful. But I was still walking around like there was something in between my legs. The following day, I finally, with a hangover, took a mirror to it. Now, if previously my clitoris had been a neat little raisin, she was now a big, shiny grape. And I'll give a little anatomy lesson to anyone who hasn't got a clitoris of their own. Normally, the labia majora, their job, the flaps, are to conceal everything and keep it all nice and closed and cosseted behind. But my clitoris had no intention anymore of staying behind the doors. She was out, like, here's Johnny, or let's say, here's Janie. And Janie's face was so swollen, she was now rubbing against the gusset of my pants. And this was causing friction and getting even worse as the day carried on going. So the only thing I could think to do was to reach for a box of plasters, band-aids, and tape my labia over the top of her to try and conceal her. So I was walking around like a cowboy, but also the plasters were twanging each of my pubes as I was walking along. Oh my God, this just couldn't be the solution. I knew the only thing I could do was go to the GP. But to add insult to injury, I still hadn't passed my driving test. So I had to go and ask my mum for a lift. And what mum of a teenage daughter is going to let her go to the GP without a line of questioning? And there were questions, but I knew my tactics. So I summoned from within me a level of maturity that was very unbefitting of my situation and said, "Mum, it's private." And that put her right off. She didn't want to talk any more about that. She said, "Okay, yes, okay, Susanna." So we got to the GP and I thought I'd throw the GP off the scent of any dirty little masturbator. And I'd lie and I would say that it was my boyfriend that had done this to me. She didn't really seem to care how that had happened. She just took one look at it and went, "Oh dear, no, we're not going to be able to deal with anything that here. Looks like you're going to have to go to ER for that." What? You're joking. Can't you just sort this out here? I can't go out there and ask my mum for a trip to the hospital. She's like, "No, also I'd probably say it looks a little like we're going to need to have some sort of surgical operation. I'd just go out." Oh my God. So I went out and I sat there with my mum and I could see her getting more worried. She didn't ask any questions, thankfully. And we went to the hospital. Now, this was a sticky evening in June, and let me tell you, when the sun comes out in the UK, the Brits love a drink, and they get themselves into all sorts of mischief and trouble, and that ER room was packed. And as I watched more Brits come in at varying levels of intoxication, I realised that me and Janie were going further and further down the pecking order of importance. I was called behind a flimsy curtain by various doctors or nurses three times, and now I'd started to tell the truth because I was desperate in case me doing it or some fictitious boyfriend doing it was going to change the outcome. But I wondered whether it was actually just for their own amusement. Anyway, sorry. Oh, yes, my mum. So my poor mum. So she's there and she's so worried, she's fretting, and she said to me, "Oh God, Susanna, just please tell me, darling, are you pregnant?" And I had to laugh because I was like, that level of experience is so far beyond where we are right now, mum, but I can't tell you that. Oh God. Anyway, finally at gone midnight, a doctor came towards me and she had such a stern, cold look in her eye. She took me into a side room And she said, dead in the eyes, you should be ashamed of yourself. What you have done is wrong. You do not touch yourself. You shouldn't ever touch yourself. You've seen your mum outside. She's terrified. You've done that. You need to go out and apologise to her. And when you've done that, you'll be treated. Not what you expect to be told by a medical professional or anything. But I went outside and I sat down and I told my mum everything. Well, as much as she needed to know. Including what the doctor had told me. And she, bless her, looked at me with these twinkly, joyful eyes, which was bizarre given the circumstances. And she said, oh, Susanna, darling, we all touch ourselves. I touch myself. What? Oh, my God. I didn't think this like situation could get any more bizarre, but it seriously, that was the cherry, I suppose the unpopped cherry on the cake of this inexperienced experience. So that night I was checked in to hospital. I, the following day, had general anaesthetic and they operated on me and they drained whatever fluid had built up within my clitoris out. And I know you're all wondering, what on earth did you do to yourself? And honestly, I don't know. The doctor at the time didn't know either. But there is one thing I do know, and that is I am not going to be awkward and ashamed about bodies and sex and growing up with my kids. I've actually got a daughter of my own. She is only 4, so we're a bit of a while away off yet. But she drew a portrait of herself recently and she said, Mummy, this is my hair and those are my eyelashes and that's my vagina. I was like, oh, brilliant. And also vulva, of course, if we're like splitting hairs here. But it makes me really happy to see that she's obviously got little shame around that. And I think that's partly to do with the fact I'm trying to do things differently than how I was raised, but also because I'm bringing her up in America, where it's encouraged when you have kids to talk about your anatomically correct body parts, not like VV, tuppence, flower, cuckoo. and then when I've gone back to England, I have had some really precious times with my mum and with Zadie, my daughter. One time recently at bath time, mum was sat on the side of the tub and Zadie was swishing around pretending to be Ariel, singing Part of Your World, pretending to be a mermaid. And she popped her head up from the bubbles and she said, Granny, I want to be a mermaid when I grow up, but I am a girl now and I have a vagina, but do mermaids have vaginas? And I remember my mum like flinching at the word vagina. But then we clocked eyes and we creased up laughing because obviously what she said was a funny thing to say, but mainly it was because we knew that was so far from how we'd been together when I was growing up. But I love my mum so much because for all of her uptight Britishness and conservativeness, back in that ER room, when it mattered the most, she was the woman that wouldn't allow her daughter to feel shame. Thank you.
Yes, I truly love to lie by you. If I didn't have to give what I give, now it has to be to say goodbye or stay, and I don't know. But remember, please, I gave you love that's only mine to give. And Janie, don't you know, Janie, don't you know, I've been trying. Janie, don't you know, Janie, don't you know, I've been trying.
Folks, what does it feel like to get hit by a car while biking, to be attacked by an alligator, or learn your spouse has hired someone to kill you? If those are the kinds of stories you find interesting, and of course you do, then What Was That Like is the podcast for you. What Was That Like is filled with real stories about the most surreal experiences of people's lives. On each episode, a guest comes on and tells about the time they found themselves in some type of extreme situation. Could be an animal attack, a plane crash, winning the showcase on The Price is Right, and more. There's a story about a woman whose parachute failed, a woman who was shot 12 times in the Fifth Third building in Cincinnati, Ohio, where my best friend used to work. There's a woman whose house exploded. Listen, it's all told through the lens of the person who actually experienced it. So if you want to hear some unbelievable and inspiring firsthand stories, I invite you to check out What Was That Like? Every story is verified. So you know even the most bizarre tales are someone's reality. Listen to What Was That Like on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on the app you're using now.
Hey, I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
Maybe you know us from our daily YouTube show, Good Mythical Morning.
But this is a little trailer for our podcast, Ear Biscuits, where two lifelong friends talk about life for a long time.
And nothing is off limits. We talk about our sex lives, our mental health journeys, but we try to never take ourselves too seriously.
So we invite you to not do the same, or to do the same. We invite you to listen. Follow and listen to Ear Biscuits.
Now for free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
We're back.
Hey, this is Risk. This episode is shameful. And that there in the background is literally what shame sounds like. That is, Shame by Nori Paramore with the Romantic Paramore violins. But before that was Song for Janie by Tim Buckley, preceded by Here's Janie by Susanna Butcher. But before Suze ever got up on that stage to share that pretty revealing story, she was a food writer at both Good Housekeeping UK and the British paper The Daily Mail. And now she's making her way through the program at The Groundlings out in LA. Check out her food and her comedy on Instagram at Suze and Food. That's SUZANDFOOD. And before we pivot to our next story, I just want to remind you guys that we have a newsletter that goes out like once or twice a month. Especially if you're not doing the social media thing, then this is a great way to keep up with all the goings on at Risk. It's pretty easy to sign up for. Just go to risk-show.com and stick your email by that big yellow button in the top right corner. Easy. And now it's time for more shamefulness. This time from our returning champion, Jamie Brickhouse, when he was at our New York City show just this past May. It's a story Jamie calls
Freshman PE. So I walk into Mrs. Howard's office. She's the school counselor. And it is my very first day of my very first year in high school, my freshman year in high school, 1982, at Monsignor Kelly High School, a private Catholic school in little old Beaumont, Texas. And I'm mortified. So I walk into her office, and she looks at me, and she says, "Well, come on in. Take a seat." She doesn't look too happy to see me, and I kind of nervously sit down, and she says, "What seems to be the problem?" And I hand her my schedule. And Mrs. Howard, she is blonde, heavy makeup, thin, an aging cheerleader. And she looks at my schedule and she says, "Well," and I said, "Well, they've given me a girl schedule, which means that I have been enrolled in girls' PE. And it also means that I have been enrolled to be a cadet, not a C-A-D-E-T, but a K as in Kelly hyphen E-T-T-E. And the cadets were all freshman girls. It was a drum and bugle corps with some bells sprinkled in, but they had adorable outfits. They had little white cowboy hats and white cowboy go-go boots and blue and gold mini dresses. So she says, "Oh, my, You have been given a girl's schedule. I said, I guess because of my name. Jamie. I guess that can be a boy's name, too. And I didn't have the gumption to say then, yeah, lady, it is a boy's name. But you know what? Since I've been given a girl's schedule, why don't you let me be a cadet? Because I wouldn't mind being one of the bells sprinkled in with the drums and bugles, and I would love to wear one of those outfits. But even better, I would rather take girls' PE than boys' PE. Because boys' PE terrifies me. But of course, Mrs. Howard corrected the mistake, and I'm enrolled in freshman boys' PE. And boy, do I have a hate love with PE. Hate because of Coach Purcell. He is a hard ass, especially on scrawny sissy boys like me. He makes me run so hard until I throw up, and then when I'm done throwing up, he makes me run another lap. And during the presidential physical fitness test, thank you, Ronald Reagan, and when I can barely do 3 chin-ups and I'm mortified, he says, that's pathetic, Brickhouse. And group showers. We all have to take the group showers. And oh, talk about mortifying. I'm so self-conscious about my skinny, scrawny body and my concave chest. But more than that, I'm afraid that the other boys are going to discover that I like what I'm seeing. But to enforce this rule, Coach Purcell has dubbed himself Towboy. So he stands at the entrance to the group showers, that cavernous room of concrete floor and white tiles and stainless steel shower trees with those little conical shower heads that look like uncut penises. And he stands at the entrance, and he scans the locker room, and he scans the showers, and he hands out those towels. And one day, I'm furtively slipping into my street clothes, trying to get out of taking the shower. And he catches me, and he wads up a towel, and he throws it at me. And I look at him bug-eyed, and he says, "In the shower, Brickhouse." And I say, wiping perspiration from the back of my neck, "But Coach, I barely broke a sweat." "Doesn't matter, strip. Everybody takes a shower." The love part of PE? Coach Purcell. He was hot. Oh, my God. Movie star hot. Olive complexion, square jaw, dimpled chin, salt and pepper hair, Cary Grant, George Clooney kind of hot. Boy, the fantasies I had about Coach Purcell. I fantasized that after telling me to take that shower, he'd make me strip, and then he'd follow me into the shower. And as all those other boys watched, he would make me service. Oh, my God. But Coach Purcell was married. His wife also taught at the school. Most of the teachers at this Catholic school were lay people, non-clergy. And she taught religion, but she was a little plain. And I thought, why does Coach, who's so gorgeous, why isn't he married to like a Farrah Fawcett? You know, someone really hot instead of someone kind of mousy and meek like her. Sophomore year rolls around, and I enroll in sophomore PE. And at Kelly, you have to take 2 full years of PE, 4 semesters. And I am also kind of gaining my confidence because I've become a drama club queen and I found my tribe there, and I've started performing in the school productions and competing in the drama tournaments and winning ribbons and doing a little stand-up comedy at school events. And I mean, I'm out there. My personality is out there. I mean, I'm not out because it's 1982 in Beaumont, Texas. But you know what? It's 1982 in America. I mean, there was no LGBTQ support group or anything like that. And I've also become sexually active, like some of my other classmates, but not with any of my other classmates. That's too dangerous. And besides, I feel like I'm the only gay guy. But lucky for me, there is a gay bar downtown, the Copa. And I slip in there. And I meet men there, older men, but older, I'm talking about 19 to late 20s. So, second semester of my sophomore year,
I don't enroll in PE. I'm like, I got to take a break. And then one day, Coach Purcell and his wife are gone overnight, like that. And the rumors are flying. And then the story comes out that Coach Purcell was tutoring this scrawny, meek kid who had fallen behind in his world history, because Coach Purcell also taught world history. And Coach Purcell put the moves on this kid. I don't know how many moves, but the kid told his parents. The parents told the school. And it being a Catholic school, they didn't want any scandal, and they quietly dismissed him and his wife. And no one pressed charges. And my first thought, why didn't he pick me? I would have consented. I would have kept his secret. And he could have kept his job and his wife, too. So, junior year, I slide through there. I continue to have my secret life downtown, continue to excel in the drama club, and I continue not to enroll in PE. Maybe they'll just forget about that last semester. My first week of my senior year, Mrs. Howard calls me into her office. Now, at this point, when I walk into her office, it's not like that first time where I was mortified and shy and scared of her. I've observed her, and I know how she operates. She reserves most of her empathy and attention for the popular kids, the jock and the cheerleaders, you know, the cadets with ambition. And I've gained my confidence, so I stroll in with senior bravado. I don't wait for her to ask me to take a seat. I sit down and I say, yes, Miss Howard, what can I do for you? Jamie, you owe us a semester of PE. Oh, come on. Can't we just let that go? I mean, my grades are stellar. I'm probably going to graduate in the top 10 of my class. Can't we just forget about it? No. We can't graduate you unless you have taken 2 full years of PE. I said, well, can I take an elective, like home ec? Jamie, boys don't take home ec. I said, well, I think senior PE is a little advanced for me at this point. So Mrs. Howard talks to the new coach, and she strikes a deal, and I am enrolled in freshman PE, which is actually a breeze. Because I'm kind of like the assistant coach. And so I help the coach, you know, time the boys on their runs. And there's this scrawny, meek kid, and he looks like he's about to pass out. And I say, hey, kid, take a break. You know, that's enough. And then during the presidential physical fitness test, and he's mortified because he can only do 4 chin-ups. And I said, don't worry about it. When I was your age, I could only do 3. Was such a senior. And I'm also the towboy. So when I'm standing there at the entrance to the showers, doling out towels like Coach Purcell, and secretly ogling some of the boys, I think about, why didn't he proposition me? But I think he didn't proposition me because I was too confident and probably too obviously gay. He preyed on the meek and the weak. But I thought, you know, if he had, I probably would have consented. You know, I was already having sex with adult men. However, the sex I was having with those men and the relationships, I met them at the gay bar on a level playing ground. It was consensual, and they weren't coercing me. As a matter of fact, I was often making the first moves. And some of those guys, actually, when they found out my age, said, I think you're too young, and turn me down. But for the most part, I see it as sex between 2 consenting gay men. But if I had done it with Coach Purcell, that would have been between a teacher and a student, a pederast and a minor. So I'm looking around the locker room, and I see that scrawny kid, and he's slipping into his street clothes without taking a shower. And I wad up a towel and I throw it at him. He looks at me bug-eyed. And I said, wipe the sweat off your back and get the hell out of here. Thank you.
Aww.
This is Risk, and this is The Motels, with a song from smack dab in the middle of the 80s, right about when Jamie would have been playing towel boy during the titular freshman PE. And that story is just one of many that Jamie tells in his various memoirs and solo shows, like Dangerous When Wet, Booze, Sex, and My Mother, and I Favor My Daddy, A Tale of Two Sissies. But this one's from his latest, called Pearl Necklace, A Gay Sexcapade. Besides that, Jamie's all over TikTok. He makes daily videos wearing high heels. It has to be seen and heard to be understood. So check him out at Jamie_Brickhouse. And speaking of solo shows, I have to mention that Gail Thomas, who coaches a lot of stories for Risk and teaches at our sister company, The Story Studio, has a show running right now at the Matrix Theater in Hollywood. It's a dark comedy called Patient 13, which grew out of a few stories that Gail's told on Risk over the years. If I were anywhere near Hollywood, I would 100% be seeing this show. I'm telling you, Gail is awesome and hilarious to boot. Seriously, I'm already jealous if you plan to see it. You can find out more at patient13show.com, and don't dilly-dally because it closes September 1st. And you know what? Both Jamie Brickhouse and Gail Thomas have both done voices on Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead! Guys, that's some serious Gen X cred right there. And I'm sure if Kevin were here, instead of doing whatever it is he's doing at the bottom of the river, he could tell us some stories from his days at MTV with The State, right next door, if I recall, to the Beavis and Butthead guys. But he seems to be in a bit of a pickle right now, so maybe another time. Anyway, that'll just about do it for Shameful. But before we go, I just want to circle back to earlier when I mentioned, quote, the shameful behavior displayed in these two stories. Yeah, to be clear, it wasn't Suze or Jamie that should have had anything to be ashamed of. What the hell, Coach Purcell? What the hell, judgy ER doc from Suze's story? Shame on you both! What the hell is wrong with some people? You know what? Tell me precisely what's wrong with some people at our subreddit r/riskpodcast, or at the Risk Podcast Fans Discussion Group on Facebook, or in the comments section on the page for this actual episode on our website, risk-show.com/podcast/shameful. All right, it's time I wrapped it up and say, hey, Kevin, you're back.
That was one of the least spacious suitcases I have ever been folded into. In any case, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.